Okay, next verse, text 17. Translation, accompanied during the daytime by the sons of the Prajapati, the predominating deities of the days, and accompanied at night by his daughters, the deities of the nights. Lakshmi Devi worships the Lord during the period known as the Sangvatsara, and his most merciful form is Kamadev. Fully absorbed in devotional service, she chants the following mantras. Purport. The word maya mayam is used in this verse should not be understood according to the interpretations of the Mayavadis. Maya means affection as well as illusion. When a mother deals with her child affectionately, she is called maya maya, maya maya. In whatever form the Supreme Lord Vishnu appears, he is always affectionate toward his devotees. Thus, the word maya mayam is used here to mean very affectionate toward the devotees. Srila Jiva Goswami writes in this regard that maya mayam can also mean kripa prachuram, deeply merciful. Similarly, Srila Viraragava says, when one is very affectionate due to an intimate relationship, one is described as maya maya. Srila Vishvadas Chakravarti Thakur explains maya mayam by dividing it into the words maya and amayam. He explains these words to indicate that because the living entity is covered by the disease of illusion, the Lord is always eager to deliver his devotee from the clutches of maya and cure him from the disease caused by the illusory energy. So any form of the Lord, here the word is described in this verse as maya mayam, meaning one who is very affectionate toward his devotees. So every form of the Lord has this quality of showing affection towards his devotees. So the form of the Lord that we're reading about here is Lord Kamadev, also sometimes known as the Lord of Lust, Cupid. Now we were talking the other day about Jai Jagannath was describing how this Kamadev, although he has a material body, he's considered to be in the category of Vishnu Tattva. And that seemed very hard to understand because we hear that, you know, Vishnu's God and completely spiritual, but yet he has a material body, so it's very difficult to understand. In fact, understanding who Lord Kamadev is in general is very difficult. It's not such an easy form of the Lord to understand. So in order to highlight this, there's a chapter in the Krishna book titled The Birth, or I don't remember what the title is, but it's called Pradyumna, Born to Krishna and Rukmini. So Pradyumna is Cupid or Kamadev. And he appears as the son of Krishna in Rukmini. So in this chapter, Prabhupada describes who Pradyumna is in a certain way. And then we also hear that other acharyas and other parts of the scripture, they describe who is Pradyumna in another way. So We're gonna go into this a little bit. We're gonna try to figure out or explore who is Pradyumna according to what Prabhupada says, who is Pradyumna according to what the scriptures say, according to what the previous acharyas say, and you know, try to understand a little better. So I'm gonna read here a little section in the Krishna book where Prabhupada describes who is Lord Kamadev. It is said that Cupid, who is directly part and parcel of Lord Vasudev, and who was formerly burned to ashes by the anger of Lord Shiva, took birth from the womb of Rukmini, begotten by Krishna. This is Kamadev, a demigod of the heavenly planets, especially capable of inducing lusty desires. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, has many grades of parts and parcels, but the quadruple expansions of Krishna, Vasudev, Sankarshan, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha are directly in the Vishnu category. Kama, or the Cupid demigod, who later took his birth from the womb of Rukmini, was also named Pradyumna, but he cannot be the Pradyumna of the Vishnu category. So here's what Prabhupada is saying, that the Pradyumna born to Krishna and Rukmini and Dvarka, that's not the same as the Pradyumna in the Chaturvyuha, or the expansion of Lord Balaram into the different categories of Vishnu. You know, so Krishna is the source of everything, and then Krishna's first expansion is Lord Balaram. And then from Balaram expands the Chaturvyuha, which is four other forms of the Lord, Sankarshan, Vasudev, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha. So here Prabhupada is saying that Pradyumna in the Chaturvyuha is different from the Pradyumna born to Krishna in Dvarka. That's what Prabhupada is saying here. He belongs to the category of Jiva Tattva. So here, Prabhupada saying that this Pradyumna belongs to the category of Jiva Tattva. He's like a Jiva, like one of us. But for exhibiting special power in the category of demigods, he was a part and parcel of the super prowess of Pradyumna. And he says that is the verdict of the Goswamis. So that's one way of seeing who is Pradyumna. He's a demigod who's a jiva, who, after he got burned up by Lord Shiva, incinerated by Lord Shiva, he took birth in the womb of Krishna, he took birth as the son of Krishna in Rukmini. So now, if we read the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is what the Krishna book is, Krishna book is like a story form, it's the same book, just in a different kind of presentation. So the 11th canto, this was translated by Prabhupada's disciples, mainly Hridayananda Maharaj and I think others, but so they quote a lot of the previous acharyas in describing each of these verses. So the verse that I just read in the Krishna book is here in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And the verse here says that Kamadev, Cupid, in expansion of Vasudev, had previously been burned to ashes by Rudra's anger. Now, to obtain a new body, he merged back into the body of Lord Vasudev. And here in the purport, in his Krishna Sandarbha, Srila Jiva Goswami cites the following verse of the Gopala Tapani Upanishad to prove that Pradyumna, who is the son of Krishna and Rukmini, is the same Pradyumna who is a member of Lord Krishna's eternal fourfold plenary expansion, the Chaturvyuha. Sounds like a direct contradiction. So Jiva Goswami is saying one thing, that they're the same. The Pradyumna that's born of Krishna, Rukmini, and Dvarka is the Pradyumna found in the Chaturvyuha. So then he quotes from the Gopala Tapani Upanishad. Quote, there in Dvarka, the Almighty Lord Krishna, endowed with his full potency, resided in the company of his three plenary expansions, Balaram, Aniruddha, and Pradyumna. So so here is, in Dvarka, Krishna appears with his expansions, the Chaturvyuha, and his expansions perform different roles in Krishna's pastimes in Dvarka. So Balaram is there. Sankarshan, who's the member of the Chaturvyuha, is there in Dvarka as Balaram. And Pradyumna, who's a member of the Chaturvyuha, is there as the son of Krishna. And Aniruddha is there as the grandson of Krishna, or the son of Pradyumna. So the Krishna Sandarbha goes on to explain, with reference to the present verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, that, quote, the Cupid whom Rudra burned with his anger is a demigod subordinate to Indra. So we have Kamadev, the demigod, Kamadev, the son of Krishna, and Kamadev, member of the Chaturvyuha. At least three ways of understanding who is this Pradyumna described in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So this demigod Cupid is a partial manifestation of the prototype Cupid, Pradyumna, who is a plenary expansion of Vasudev. The demigod Cupid, being unable to attain a new body on his own, entered within the body of Pradyumna. Otherwise, Cupid would have had to remain in a perpetual state of disembodiment, a result of Rudra's having incinerated him with his anger. Anyway, here's another seeming contradiction. So one is that in the verse, and also in the Krishna book, what Prabhupada... Yeah, right. What one... Prabhupada is... And in the verse, it says that after Kamadev got incinerated by Lord Shiva, he merged into the body of Vasudev. And in the quote from the Krishna Sandarbha, written by Jiva Goswami, he says that Lord Kamadev merged into the body of Pradyumna. Another difference, because you know they're not the same. I mean, once they're both in the category of Vishnu Tattva, but you know there's a clear distinction between Vasudev, who's like, you know, Krishna when he's in Dvarka, he's also known as Vasudev. So that member of the Chaturvyuha, Vasudev, that's Krishna in Dvarka. So Jiva Goswami is saying that Pradyumna, when he got incinerated by Lord Shiva, he entered the body of Vasudev, or sorry, Pradyumna, and then the Srimad Bhagavatam and Prabhupada, they say that he entered into the body of Vasudev. So yeah, at least two contradictions here. Okay, so then according to Srila Sridhar Swami, Pradyumna took birth from the womb of Rukmini before Sri Krishna... Oh, sorry. I've missed a paragraph. In his English rendering of Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada confirms the absolute status of Pradyumna, Lord Krishna's first son. Okay, Prabhupada said one thing in the Krishna book. Now we're going to hear another thing that Prabhupada says in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, this is Prabhupada speaking in his purport. Quote, Pradyumna and Aniruddha are also expansions of the personality of Godhead, and thus they are also Vishnu Tattva. Okay. So even Prabhupada, he's saying one thing. He's saying that this Pradyumna is Jiva Tattva in the Krishna book, and that he's not in the category of Vishnu Tattva. And here he's saying he is in the category of Vishnu Tattva in the purport of the first canto, 14th chapter, verse 30. At Dvarka, Lord Vasudev is engaged in his transcendental pastimes along with his plenary expansions, namely Sankarshan, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha, and therefore each and every one of them can be addressed as the personality of Godhead. Okay, Srila Sridhar Swami notes that Kamadev, or Cupid, now appearing within Pradyumna, is a portion of Vasudev because he is manifest from the element Chit, consciousness, which is presided over by Vasudev, and also because he, Cupid, is the cause of material generation. As the Lord states in Bhagavad Gita, Prajanas chasmi kandarpaha, of progenitors I am Kandarpa, Cupid. So there's another, maybe you could argue, so another seemingly contradiction. Here, Srila Sridhar Swami is saying that Kamadev is a portion of Vasudev. But earlier, we had read that Kamadev is a partial manifestation of the prototype Cupid. That was Jiva Goswami in the Krishna Sandarbha. So, what is it? So, we're seeing a lot of contradictions just here in trying to understand who is this Kamadev. So, one way... Jai Jagannath and I were talking the other day. One way, you know, devotees, they hear these things and they say, okay. and they move on. It's not such a big deal for devotees a lot of times that, you know, with these contradictions, they just say, oh, okay, well, we're talking about spiritual subject matter here, and you know, a lot of it's inconceivable, so all right, whatever, it's not, let's just move on. But another, it's important to, I guess, try to understand how we can view these contradictions. They're found all throughout the Shastras and the commentaries of the Acharyas, contradictions here, and the Acharya Nisha was telling us that he was hearing a class, maybe on his trip in Vrindavan, by Mukundadatta, who was saying that, was it Mukundadatta? Who was saying that the Shastras and Acharya, the writings, they're full of contradictions. Well, you know, if you really read them scrutinizingly, you can see that, wow, there's actually a lot of, you know, in seemingly apparent contradictions. So, what do we do? One way to see this is that it's just that, they're apparent contradictions. They're seeming contradictions. But the fact is that really there is no contradiction. It's like when we're trying to use, like a lot of us, we grew up with modern education system, and we learned the tools of rationality and analysis and reason and reductionism and all these tools that we use in modern education. We're trying to use these tools to try to understand spirit, spiritual subject matter. Who is God? Who are his expansions? These kind of things. And when we try to use these tools to try to understand the subject matter, it's going to fail. We're not going to understand. There's going to be contradictions if we're using those tools. Like, there's also the example of, like the famous example of the five blind men, five blind men trying to understand what is an elephant like. So one blind man, like, you know, feels the tail of the elephant, and he thinks, oh wow, the elephant's like a rope. You know, that's what an elephant is. That's his conception of what an elephant is. It's like a rope because he felt the tail. And then the other blind man, he might, you know, grab the leg of the elephant and might think, oh wow, an elephant's like a trunk of a tree or something. And that's his conception of what an elephant is like. And then another blind man, he might kind of touch the stomach of the elephant, might think, oh wow, this is like a big wall. That's, you know, an elephant's like a big wall. Another one might touch the ivory tusk of the elephant and might think, oh, well, an elephant's like a smooth, hard cone thing. And another might touch the hose or the trunk, the snout or whatever of the elephant, might think, oh wow, it's like a hose. An elephant's like a hose. Like that because they're blind, they're using their limited capacity to try to understand what is the elephant, they're only getting like a small portion of it. So in one sense, they're all right, but they're also wrong, you know, because the elephant's not like a rope, but it is. So we're kind of like that when we're trying to understand topics of the absolute truth, using our limited capacities of language and vocabulary and reason and rationality. We can really only get certain aspects of it. And when we try to compare it with other explanations and things, it might seem contradictory. So that's one way we can understand these contradictions that we find in the Shastras. Another point that could be said is sometimes there's double talk in the scriptures on purpose. For example, I know a lot of devotees, sometimes devotees, they like to think that, you know, there's all these contradictions in the scriptures, so just so that they'll keep us attentive and focused and, you know, keep us on our toes. Whether that's the case or not, I don't know. But there are certainly examples of the scriptures where there is straight up double talk. Like in the Ishopanishad, the fifth verse, they say that the Supreme Lord walks and he does not walk. And he's very near, but yet he's very far. He's situated in one place, yet he's everywhere. And like this, there's just straight up blatant contradictions. And the purpose of these contradictions is, it's to make us reconsider and reform our very deep-rooted material conceptions in our mind about the absolute truth, and trying to understand what is the supreme absolute truth. So that's one way. It's because it challenges our conceptions. Because, you know, when we hear that the Lord walks or something, you know, we might have a material conception of what that means. Okay, we know what walking is like, so we think that the Lord walks like us. But the Isha Upanishad says the Lord walks and he does not walk. You know, okay, you know, our material conception is now out the window. How can we understand that? So he also does not walk, which means that he doesn't have a walk like ours, like a material walk kind of thing. So it's just to make us challenge our material conceptions about the absolute truth. That's another way of trying to understand what contradictions are when we read all these contradictions. Another way of looking at contradictions is that another fundamental reason is that is Krishna's very personal and compassionate and loving nature. He reciprocates with his devotees in an individualized way. We can't always understand why Krishna is doing what he's doing and how he's interacting with different devotees. It's described that his will is inscrutable. So he might act one way towards one devotee in a completely contradictory way towards another devotee, and sometimes it's very difficult to understand how Krishna is dealing with all the living entities. And there might be seemingly contradictions in Krishna's personality and whatever, but that's just Krishna's will, and that's his loving nature towards individual devotees. So that's another way that we can understand certain contradictions. So how can we understand these contradictions? So one way is to just broaden our understanding of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. If we just try to become more edified in the philosophy, then we can actually understand that some of these contradictions can be very easily understood just by knowing more. For example, in mathematics, you know, there's higher mathematics and lower mathematics. So when we were in grade school, we learned that you cannot subtract a larger number from a smaller number. That's against the rules. You can't do that. And we were taught that way because in order for us to learn math, you know, subtraction, we have to, in our mind, we have to have a conception, okay, you take a smaller number away from a bigger number, and then that bigger number becomes smaller. So, and then that's it. We stop there. So when we hear that you can subtract, later on we hear that you can subtract a large number from a small number, we think, oh, I can't do that. That's a contradiction. But later, as we kind of learn more, we become more edified in the field of mathematics. We learn about negative numbers. And we're like, wow, negative numbers exist, and you can do that. We learn about imaginary numbers, rational numbers, irrational numbers. And, you know, we learn more, and then we can accommodate that in our worldview. So instead of seeing that as a contradiction, we see that as, you know, we just widen and deepen our understanding. And that's another way that we can kind of view these contradictions. Another way that we can understand contradictions is really the way is by patient and oral reception from a self-realized soul. So we just keep hearing over and over again from a self-realized soul, and then gradually all the contradictions that are in our mind will become resolved. And as part of that too is receiving clarification on seeming contradictions. So we see a contradiction in the scripture, and we go to a self-realized soul and say, okay, how can we understand this? And we receive clarification like that. So even great acharyas, you know, because I was describing earlier that our philosophy is so vast, and so there's so much involved in our philosophies. There's so many details that are given, and sometimes acharyas might disagree on particular little details, like maybe this could be an example or maybe not. So we're also advised not to take sides. We don't say, oh, I I think, whatever Prabhupada is right and Jiva Goswami is, whatever. We don't take sides. We just note, okay, there's a contradiction, and we move on. But we're always remaining faithful to Srila Prabhupada and our current guru, spiritual master. Because we understand previous acharyas through our current guru or spiritual master. That's how we can see previous acharyas. It's always through the parampara. We don't just go directly to whatever Jiva Goswami and try to understand Krishna consciousness through him directly. Okay, so we learn that there's at least three different ways, three different ways of understanding who is Lord Kamadev. One is the Chaturvyuha, so he's an expansion of Lord Balaram in the Chaturvyuha. So in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's this system for naming the different forms of Vishnu that have come in the material world based on the placement of their weapons. So Vishnu has four arms, and he carries four things. Two weapons, a disc and a club, and two items for giving blessings, a conch and the lotus. So depending on what hand they're in, the Vishnu is named differently. There's different names and there's only so many permutations of these four items in the four hands. That four factorial. That's right. So four times three times two times one. That's how you decide how many combinations there are. So there's 24 forms of Vishnu. And this is described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Each position is described. And each position has a different name. So Pradyumna is one of those forms of Vishnu. And his position, and the way it begins is that it's described that the bottom right hand, you start with the bottom right hand, then the top right hand, and then the top left hand, and then the bottom left hand. So Pradyumna is the disc, the conch, the club, and the lotus. And then Aniruddha, Pradyumna's son, his position is the disc, the club, the conch, and the lotus. So, anyways, so that's how we can understand Pradyumna in the category of the Chaturvyuha. He's also a demigod. Here we learn that Lord Kamadev was incinerated by Lord Shiva. So the story goes, apparently this is found in the Matsya Purana, but I don't know if we have a translation of that. I found a scholarly version of the Matsya Purana online, which I was reading to try to get more details on this pastime of how Lord Kamadev was incinerated by Lord Shiva, because that's not really in the Krishna book or the Bhagavatam so much. Apparently it's in the Matsya Purana, but so what I'm about to say, take it with a grain of salt. It's not, I don't know, our acharyas, I don't know if they've commented on it, but some scholar apparently translated the Matsya Purana. And the story goes like this. that there was this one demon, his name is Tarakasura, and he was harassing the demigods quite a lot. Apparently he got some benediction that he couldn't be killed except by the son of Lord Shiva. Only the son of Lord Shiva could kill him. So this demon was terrorizing the demigods, and Lord Brahma and Indra was wondering what to do because he's the king of the demigods. So Lord Brahma advised Indra that if you try to have Parvati, the wife of Shiva, like woo Lord Shiva, and so that they can copulate and have a son, then that son can kill Tarakasura and your problem will be solved. So Indra, he employed the demigod Cupid, Kamadev, to help him out, to try to woo Parvati to have a son with Lord Shiva. But the problem was that Lord Shiva was in deep meditation, and it wasn't the right time. It wasn't the proper season or time for engaging in, having kids or something. So Lord Kamadev decided, okay, he went to go go to where Lord Shiva was meditating, and in order to, he has this guard, Nandi, his bull, I guess. He stands guard to prevent people from breaking Lord Shiva's meditation. And so Lord Kamadev took the form of a fragrant breeze, and he got past his guard, Nandi, and then he created an untimely spring in the area where Lord Shiva was meditating, you know, very conducive for wooing. then he shot his flower arrow. Apparently that's what Cupid does. He shoots arrows at people and induces lusty desires in them. So he shot his flower arrow right at Shiva, and this broke his meditation. Then he got really furious. You know, when Lord Shiva gets mad, he gets really, really mad. So then he opened his third eye right at Cupid, and just it completely turned his body into ashes. You know, Cupid, you know, Kamadev didn't die. His body was incinerated, but he was still there in like a disembodied form. So that's kind of the background to that. But another point was that Cupid had a wife. Her name was Rati. So Rati was the wife of Cupid, and when Rati found out that Cupid got his body got burned to ashes and now he's in a disembodied form, Rati was like, "Oh no, my husband!" So then she approached Lord Shiva. "Lord Shiva, hey, can you do something? You just burned my husband. Now I don't have a husband in an embodied form. Can you give him a body, please?" But it turns out before Rati asked Lord Shiva for this, you know, to give her husband back a body, there was another demon, I guess you can say, who was worshiping Shiva. His name was Shambhara. So Shambhara was worshiping Lord Shiva to get, I don't know, some kind of benediction or, you know, powers or something. You know, that's what demons do, I guess. And what he wanted, so then he did some austerities and he pleased Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva said, "Okay, what do you want, Shambhara?" And then Shambhara said, "I want Rati." You know, he wanted Cupid's wife, you know, as a consort or whatever. And then Shiva had to agree, "Okay, you can have Rati." But then Rati came to Shiva and said, "Hey, can I have my husband back?" And then Lord Shiva said, "Oh, sorry, I already gave you away to Shambhara." And then, so Rati was like, "Oh," she was like really distraught by this. She wasn't expecting that. But Lord Shiva, you know, said, "Don't worry. You will get what you desire. You'll get your husband back. And don't worry, it won't be so bad." So anyway, so then Shambhara took Rati back to his place, thinking he would enjoy and everything. And then Rati apparently knew the art of bewildering people and deluding them. So she somehow managed to stay in the palace or whatever of Shambhara, in the home of Shambhara, and she remained untouched just because she had this mystic powers just to bewilder him so that she could be left alone and not be, you know, with this guy, Shambhara. So then she took on the name, as a result of her having these mystic potency, she took on the name Mayavati. So now Rati is Mayavati, and Cupid is in a disembodied form. What happens now is that Kamadev, he then either merges into the body of Vasudev or Pradyumna. According to the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's not quite exactly clear whether it's Pradyumna or it's Vasudev. But nevertheless, he merges into the body of, let's say, Pradyumna. And this Pradyumna, the Chaturvyuha, he appears in Dvarka as Krishna's son. So Krishna's having his pastimes in Dvarka about 5,000 years ago, and the Chaturvyuha Pradyumna appears as Rukmini and Krishna's son. Now, when when Pradyumna was born, there was this prophecy or something saying that Shambhara, the demon who asked for Rati as his benediction, that Shambhara would be killed by Pradyumna. So Shambhara came to know about this prophecy, and he became very disturbed. Naturally, if you know you're going to be killed by somebody, just like Kamsa knew he was going to get killed by Krishna, so Kamsa, he wanted to kill Krishna before Krishna would kill him. So similarly, Shambhara wanted to kill Pradyumna before Pradyumna would kill him. So Shambhara kidnapped Pradyumna, and he threw Pradyumna into the sea, thinking, okay, my problem is solved. But what happened was that there was this big fish in the sea who swallowed Pradyumna, and this fish was caught by a fisherman. And this fisherman sold this big, huge fish in the marketplace. And it turns out that Shambhara really likes fish, and he really likes eating meat and fish and everything. So, because he's, you know, that's what demons like to do. So he actually purchased the fish in which ate Pradyumna. So now there's this fish with Pradyumna in it going back to the home of Shambhara. And while Shambhara's cook is cutting open the fish to prepare it for Shambhara's meal, he found Pradyumna, this very beautiful boy, in the body of this fish. And the cook didn't know what to do with it. So he gave Pradyumna to Mayavati, who was also in the home as Shambhara's maidservant. So now Pradyumna and Mayavati are reunited. But there's a problem is that Mayavati is this grown woman and Pradyumna is this baby, yet they're supposed to be husband and wife. So it's a little bit of a conflict of moods here. Mayavati, she sees the baby and she's like, and actually she has great affection for the baby and she cares for him like a mother would. But then as Pradyumna gets older and grows, which he grows very quickly into youth, her mood changes. Now her mood changes from a motherly mood to one of more of like a conjugal mood. And she felt bad a little about it because she wasn't really sure that at first she wasn't sure that this was her previous husband Kamadev. So she was feeling bad, like, oh, I'm having lusty feelings toward this child whom I had motherly feelings for. And then Narada Muni appears on the scene to kind of set things right. So then Narada Muni tells Mayavati that, oh, in fact, he actually is your husband, so it's okay. And, you know, he told the whole story. So then Mayavati knew what was happening. And Pradyumna was also wondering, too, why is Mayavati, who's like my mother, having these conjugal feelings towards me? It kind of doesn't seem right. But then Mayavati told Pradyumna that actually you're my husband. And anyway, the whole story was narrated. Yeah. So then, now Pradyumna was there, and Mayavati said that, you know, you can act. Your mother is worried sick about you. Your mother back in Dvarka, Rukmini, she's like a cow who lost her calf, always wondering what happened to my lost son. So we should go back there to Dvarka to pacify your mother who's worried about you. Because he was kidnapped as a young boy. And only 6 days after he was born was he kidnapped. So Mayavati said, you can kill Shambhara. I have this mystic power called Mahamaya. You can use it and you could actually kill Shambhara and then we can go back to Dvarka. So Pradyumna, he got some mystic potency from Mayavati and approached Shambhara. It was really interesting how he approached him too. It was really funny. So he just went right up to Shambhara, and without exchanging any pleasure. Apparently, they've never met before. So all of a sudden, this young, beautiful boy just goes right up to Shambhara, and the very first thing that Pradyumna says, he just hurls intolerable insults at Shambhara. Just that's the first thing. Just And demons, when they're insulted, they get extremely agitated. It was described that his insults are so intolerable that that Shambhara, he was disturbed like a snake that just got kicked. If you kick a snake, they go nuts. So just like that, Shambhara was, enraged. His eyes turned red and totally enraged. He just took his club and threw it right at Pradyumna. So Pradyumna had his own club on him, and then he just kind of hit the other club away, and then it was on. Then there's a big fight between Shambhara and Pradyumna. So then Shambhara flew into the sky, and then he had all this like black magic and everything that he got, I guess, from Lord Shiva, and he started hurling all these weapons at, downpour of weapons right at Pradyumna. But Pradyumna, having a greater mystic power, Mahamaya, and as described that some powers in the mode of goodness, he was able to easily counteract all of these weapons of Shambhara. Then Pradyumna just took out his sword and chopped off his head, and complete with his helmet and red mustache and earrings, and that was the end of Shambhara. So then Mayavati, apparently she knows the art of flying and going from different places to different places. So she then picked up Pradyumna, and they flew back to Dwarka. And it was described that Mayavati looked like a cloud carrying a lightning bolt. Like Mayavati carrying Pradyumna was like a cloud carrying lightning bolt. And then they landed right in one of the main palaces of Dwarka, of Krishna. And they landed right in the middle of an assembly of the ladies of Dwarka. And when they appeared, all the ladies thought, wow, this is Krishna, because Pradyumna, being the son of Krishna, he resembled Krishna a lot. In fact, it was said that in no way was Pradyumna inferior to Krishna. Pradyumna had like all the, it was most like Krishna. The most like Krishna you can be was Pradyumna, because he was his son. In fact, it was described that he was a perfect reflection of Krishna's beauty. So this is Pradyumna, and he appeared in the palace, and all the ladies thought, oh wow, this is Krishna. And because it was Krishna, they all decided, I don't know, they just all scattered and hid, because they didn't, I guess it wasn't appropriate, I guess, for them to be with Krishna at that point. But then they were looking at Pradyumna, and they thought, wait, this isn't Krishna. There's slight differences. We see that Pradyumna has long arms and the yellow silk cloth and the curly blue hair, darkish bluish complexion of a rain cloud, lotus eyes. There's so many similarities, but there's slight differences. And then Rukmini was also there, and she saw Pradyumna, and then she was thinking, wow, I have so much affection for this person who just appeared in the palace, and he looks so much like Krishna. Maybe this is, my long-lost son. So she was thinking this way, and then Krishna and Balaram and Krishna's parents, Vasudeva and Devaki, came, and there's this whole, like, what's going on in the palace? So then, naturally, when there's confusion, Narada Muni comes in again, and he tells everybody everything. Okay, this is Pradyumna, and they all hug, and that's, kind of the story of Pradyumna. So Pradyumna is considered a son of Krishna. He was also kind of like the commander-in-chief of the army of Dwarka. So Krishna's army, we hear about how powerful it is, because it has Pradyumna as his commander-in-chief, who is very similar to Krishna. So in many of the battles that we see between the Yadus and other armies, Pradyumna is there, and he's kind of leading the charge. So when Banasura and Lord Shiva were fighting Krishna and Balaram and the Yadus, Pradyumna was also there, and he was fighting with Kartikeya. Kartikeya was the son of Shiva, who is the one who actually ended up killing Tarakasura, back in the day. But anyway, so Kartikeya, he's like the god of war, and he's considered to be very, very powerful as being the son of Lord Shiva. And so Pradyumna was fighting with Kartikeya in the battle between Lord Shiva and Krishna. So Krishna was fighting Lord Shiva, and then Krishna's son was fighting Lord Shiva's son. Natural, you know, that makes sense. And so Pradyumna was very easily beating Kartikeya in this battle. So he's considered to be a very, very excellent fighter. And there's another pastime where King Shalva, he was a friend of Shishupal. Shishupal was supposed to marry Rukmini, so they were about ready to get married. Shishupal and Rukmini were going to get married, and then Krishna came out of nowhere and stole Rukmini, and Shishupal got very upset. Why did Krishna steal my wife? And there's this big battle that ensued between the Yadus and Shishupal and his army. So Shishupal was killed by Krishna, and one of Shishupal's really good friends was Shalva. And Shalva vowed, you know, he lost the battle against the Yadus, and then he vowed it that day, okay, I want revenge for Krishna killing Shishupal, so I'm gonna perform very intense austerities, I'm gonna worship Lord Shiva, and I'm gonna get some benedictions, and I'm going to kill Krishna. I'm gonna take out the Yadus because they unrighteously took Rukmini from us. So then he did that, and then when he pleased Lord Shiva asked him, what do you want? And he said, I want an invincible airplane that can go anywhere I want, and that can't be destroyed, and especially it's very dangerous to the Yadus. You know, like this really powerful airplane he asked for. So then Lord Shiva said, okay, you can have it. So then now, King Shalva, with his invincible airplane and his armies, they went to go attack Dwarka. and it was kind of a surprise, and all of a sudden in the horizon there's this big, huge airplane coming, and then it is described that it appeared that the sky was becoming as dark as night. Like this dense darkness overcame Dwarka because of King Shalva and his armies coming to attack it. But Pradyumna was there, and he appeared like the rising sun. And then there was this really, really intense battle between King Shalva and Pradyumna and Krishna's army. So Pradyumna acted very, very valiantly in this battle. It's described that he shot like 100 arrows right at Shalva, and he shot 25 arrows at Shalva's, you know, commander-in-chief. His name was Duman. And he shot like 10 arrows at all of the chariot drivers and killed all the chariot drivers. And he shot 3 arrows at all the elephants and horses and carriers of the other army, killed all of them. He shot an arrow at every single soldier of the army, you know, very quickly, one right after another. So soldiers on both sides are like, wow, Pradyumna is really a good fighter. He's, you know, shooting all these arrows. But what happened was when, I guess he was fighting Duman, the commander-in-chief of King Shalva's army, he suddenly came up and he hit Pradyumna right on the chest with his club. And then Pradyumna became unconscious. So it seemed like, oh no, Pradyumna's down and out. What are we going to do? Our commander-in-chief is down. So Pradyumna's chariot driver, who happens to be the son of Krishna's chariot driver, it's amazing, you know, that's kind of how things happen back in the day, is that you kind of take on the position of same service as your father. So Krishna's chariot driver is Daruka, and Daruka's son is the chariot driver of Pradyumna. So Pradyumna then, you know, the role of the chariot driver is very important in battle. The chariot driver and the soldier are supposed to work together so that, you know, like the soldier is supposed to protect the chariot driver by, you know, firing arrows and keeping the enemy away. And the chariot driver is supposed to maneuver the cart in such that to protect the fighter. So they're supposed to have a very, very close relationship. So the chariot driver was very wondering what to do. Oh no, my Pradyumna is unconscious. So then he decided, before he gets killed, that he would take him away from the battlefield. So the fighting is still going on. The chariot driver takes Pradyumna away from the battlefield. And then when Pradyumna comes back to external consciousness, he's wondering, you know, why am I not in the battle? Like, what's going on? Why did you take me out of the battle? And he got really, really upset at the chariot driver for doing this, because Pradyumna is a very chivalrous person, and, you know, to leave the battle is considered a very, like, a cowardly thing to do. And Pradyumna was wondering, oh, what will the ladies at Dvorka think of me? They will call me a coward and an emasculator. how will I go before Krishna and Balaram? How will I go before Krishna and Balaram, having left the battlefield? Like, this is the worst. I'd much rather have died in the battlefield than leave it like this. But the chariot driver was thinking, you know, he didn't do anything wrong. You know, like, it's my duty to protect you in battle. So me taking you out was right. And although he got chastised by Pradyumna, he didn't take it that seriously. So anyway, Pradyumna wanted to go back to the battle immediately, as fast as possible. So then he went back with a lot of fury, and he really was after Duman, who the one who struck him in the chest with the club. So immediately he shot, like, I don't know, something like, you know, 4 arrows at each of the horses of Duman's chariot, killed all of them, one for each horse. And then he shot 1 arrow at the chariot driver, killed him, shot 1 arrow at Duman's bow, broke it in half, shot another arrow at his flag, tore that in half, and then he shot 1 arrow right at Duman, severed his head from his body. That's the end. You know, so very quick, he killed him. So anyway, the battle was still raging on, because there's this invincible airplane that they just couldn't do anything with. This airplane is described as like this big, huge iron thing in the sky. And it moved so fast. Like, one moment it was on top of the hill, another moment it was on the ground, another moment it was in the air, another moment it was, you know, it was just all over the place. And the residents, you know, the Pradyumna and the Dvorka army, they didn't know what to do with it. They couldn't defeat it, because Lord Shiva gave them the benediction that it would be especially dangerous to the Yadus. So there's this intense fighting going on, and, you know, nothing really happened so much. So Krishna heard about it. And Krishna came with Balaram, you know, to kind of join the fight. Anyway, so Krishna, being Supreme Personality of Godhead, he took out Shalva, and that was the end of him. But it was something that Pradyumna couldn't do. But Krishna had to come and kind of protect work like that. Okay, anyway, so that's Pradyumna. I don't know, is there any questions about this? Okay, so next we'll hear about the prayers of Lakshmi in Ketu Malavarsha. So I was wondering if I was going to get to that or not, but I guess these stories took longer to narrate. But so we'll probably stop here. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Why did Narada Muni have to come? Yeah. That's Narada Muni's service. That's what he does. Every time there's like a situation where people are perplexed, like Krishna's devotees are perplexed. Krishna knew. When he came to the scene, Krishna knew everything that was happening, who Pradyumna was, you know, exactly what everybody